Well, I'm, as we all have been, very honored to have been invited to be a participant in this symposium honoring John, who has definitely been a mentor and also a taskmaster of myself and many of my colleagues. And I had a lot of difficulty, as have several people who have given talks here today, in trying to figure out exactly what I would talk about, being even later in the symposium, and also having this idea that perhaps I'm supposed to review everything that anybody's done about soil quality and organic agriculture, which, by the way, if you just put in soil quality in quotes and organic agriculture in quotes, you'll get something like 85 articles, which was way more than I could even go through, and that's not including all the ones that might be using other words like soil health or specific soil quality attributes. So it's I appreciate, John, the opportunity to have looked at all this literature, but I am certainly not going to try and review all of this here today. So after I talk a little about how I've interacted with John in my career and what he's meant to some of us in NCR 59, now NCERA 59. I'm just going to talk about a little of my own research in soil quality and organic systems, and then about some other research, both in organic and not inorganic research or systems, and what I think we can come out of my search of the literature with. So which, oh, here we go. So for the, I think it's about eighth time or something in this presentation, you see the soil quality test kit and the green book, which I actually have my copy here, but I left it in the hotel room. So I did carry it, but I didn't bring it here. Again, John has been a man with a mission, and in his own quiet and sometimes not so quiet way, but always with a smile, he kind of flew in to NCR 59 in the early 90s, because I think he thought we'd be a good crew to advance his agenda. And then I noticed, John, that once you'd gotten your agenda advanced, you kind of flew right back out. he moved on to other things. So in a poster I put together for the big world meetings in Philadelphia a number of years ago, we ended up writing kind of a history of this regional committee on soil organic matter. Started a long time ago, but in the 1990s, the focus, we even renamed ourselves that we were a regional committee matter, regional committee on soil organic matter and soil quality. And John slipped in there, and he organized us to, helped organize us, but I'd say he was the taskmaster and the gentle whipcracker, to get us organizing symposia and especially in publishing the Methods for Assessing Soil Quality book. And I know he called me lots of times because I was late on my chapter. But it was probably a really thankless task. But you did a great job, John. And, you know, actually NCERA 59 is working on a new methods book right now, and we'd love to have you back to crack the whip again if you want to do it. No. I don't really. And that's, John's not in that picture, but that's some of our NCR 59 folks, or NCERA 59 folks. So the organic research that I have been involved with is in a long-term cropping systems trial at Lamberton, Minnesota, where starting in 1989 they had put in these four management systems, a high input conventional system where there was a 10% over yield goal plus 10% amounts of chemicals, fertilizer and pesticides put on, broadcast and more intensive tillage regime, low input, which meant mainly banding fertilizer and herbicide and reducing the tillage, and then an organic system which had comparable kind of intensive tillage to the high input system, but manure inputs, and that was swine manure to a two-year. And we know that organic can't really be two-year, but it balanced the design, and a four-year with beef manure inputs, and then a minimum input because, you know, we got such great soils in Minnesota that it actually manages to produce a corn crop, even though nothing's happened to it except tillage and delayed planting for weed control in all these years. And two rotation lengths, two-year corn-soybean and four-year corn, soybean, oats interseeded with alfalfa and alfalfa. And there have been a couple of papers put out about yield results. Paul Porter put one out with others in 2003, and Jeff Coulter has just recently put out another one that goes through yields from 1992 to 2007. And compared to that high input two-year system, which is pretty typical of a lot of growers in that part of the state, the corn grain yield was not reduced at all by the low purchased input or organic four-year rotations. And soybean was not reduced with the low purchased input. A poor graduate student, Maya Kuratomi, who decided to go to vet school after she did her master's with me, measured soil quality indicators on this study has plots for every crop in every year of the rotation, and she measured a full suite of soil quality indicators on all those plots, and we took measurements for 2 years and generated these little pictures, spider graphs or radar graphs or whatever they're called. The upper left corner is the organic inputs, the upper right is the low purchased inputs, and the bottom middle is the high purchased inputs, and I tried to make the circles all the same, but they're not quite. The dashed lines show for the two-year and the solid for the four-year. And it's hard to read all the things, but we're looking at mineralizable nitrogen, microbial biomass carbon, total carbon, mineralizable carbon, that's an incubation, basal respiration rate, and particulate organic matter carbon. And you can see, and I just want you to get the visuals because I got some numbers coming up, but you can see that the organic system really has the biggest boxes, which means it's scored highest on most of those things. But actually, it turns out that for a number of things, the organic and low input, low purchase input were similar, for example, for aggregate stability, which is not on that. These are some of the what I call biological indicators. And the high purchased input, you can see, was quite a bit smaller in just about all those indicators. Here, just taking a look at the soil carbon pools at this site, although there were no differences in total carbon in the two-year rotation, organic was higher than the high purchased input in the four-year rotation and the same as the low purchased input. Palm was higher in both rotations in the organic system, and so was the potentially, I'm calling it potentially mineralizable carbon here, the carbon determined from an incubation study. And microbial biomass sometimes was higher and sometimes was not. So pretty clearly, and echoing what many, many people have seen in many of the studies that you know about and that I looked at, we see these carbon pools are improved by additions of legumes, perennial legumes in a rotation, and also by additions of organic matter in the form of manure. One of the things that's interesting, as you'll see in this slide, is that with aggregates and with some of the carbon pools, the fact that we have the reduced tillage in that low purchase input system, so even though we're using the chemical inputs and we're not applying organic matter, that reduced tillage seems to be able to kind of compensate for what the organic matter does in a organic system that's more intensively cultivated, so that we end up in that four-year rotation with aggregate stability that are the same in the reduced tillage and the organic systems. And this just shows very strongly how important the oat alfalfa and alfalfa years are in creating that better soil structure over the length of that rotation. Obviously, where you don't have to till at all in the third and fourth year, and all those nice fibrous roots of the small grain and the high quality root inputs in the alfalfa are making a big difference in that soil structure. So it's not really a big surprise that crop rotation can make a big impact on soil quality. This is from way back, looking at soil and stable aggregates in continuous soybean or continuous corn, a lot less soil organic matter and a lot less soil and stable aggregates compared to where we add more crops in the rotation and have either a phase of pasture or continuous wheat or continuous grass, those grasses with lots of roots. Here's some work I tried to find, but maybe I couldn't. Cindy and Kathleen's papers on your trials on all this.
You're not there.
I know. I'm waiting. I'm waiting, you guys. Of course, the stuff I just showed you is not in a published paper either. It's in a fact sheet.
Thank you.
but I think this information, again, not on a on an organic conventional comparison, but looking at effects of these perennial legumes and small grains included in rotations, shows that with or without nitrogen, you can get significantly more particulate organic matter carbon or resistant carbon where you have, that's a hydrolyzable carbon, where you have those longer, more diverse rotations.
Yeah.
Yes?
Is that particulate organic carbon weight loss on emission?
You know, I don't know what the Russell and Laird and those guys did.
That's measured. That's,
yeah.
Carbon.
And then the, and I meant to apologize, John, because you will see that many of these measurements are not all put back on a volumetric basis, and I know you're going to yell at me for that, but it's just the way it ended up being done, so sorry about that. Here's effects on microbial biomass, where you see a very significant increase in microbial biomass where we had the corn, oats, alfalfa crop. And then this is a neat study from Gregorich and others in Ontario. And the way this is set up is comparing to grass and forests a rotation and a monoculture corn system. And the numbers not in parentheses are the megagrams per hectare of C3-derived carbon, and in the parentheses is the C4 corn-derived carbon. So you see, obviously, where you only have corn one in 4 years, you are putting in a lot less corn inputs. But what's really cool is that although the top 20 centimeters is fairly similar in the total amount of carbon in both the monoculture and the rotation, look how much more carbon is being building up in that 20 to 70 centimeter depth increment with that alfalfa in the rotation. And that is going to be much more likely to be stable carbon because it's down underneath the plow layer. So that you get almost as much carbon stored in that depth increment under the rotation maze, 20 to 70 centimeters, as you have in that long-term grassland at that same depth. So big benefits from rotations. And that's kind of, you'll see, kind of going to be the point of my talk, is that organic agricultural systems offer us this great opportunity to also, I remember Elizabeth Dick telling me that it's kind of the way you can do, because they're so much more complicated and knowledge-based to manage. I mean, you can't just go out and put on a another shot of fertilizer, soluble fertilizer, or another shot of herbicides. They're really kind of the test for the concepts of what makes a really agroecologically sound system. Here are just some more of the benefits that can be contributed by forages. We already talked about more pools of carbon, but also reducing nitrogen losses, improving wildlife habitat, and reducing subsurface drainage. So here's the paper by Mark and John that I assume was the product of all some of all that work you did, carting John around the countryside, showing comparisons from five farm pairs, conventional and organic pairs, three of them from eastern Nebraska, and then a couple farm comparisons in North Dakota. And you can see these are some of the lab measurements. Mark talked already about some of the soil test kit measurements that were made. But you can see that soil bulk density was lower and available water holding capacity was higher on four of the five organic farms compared to the conventional farms. Soil nitrate leaching was higher at the conventional farms on all but one of the locations, but there the organic farm was higher. Anaerobic nitrogen, so a measure of mineralizable nitrogen, was higher on the organic farms for four out of the five. And the trends in extractable phosphorus varied. And I think what the conclusion I draw and that they drew in this paper was that organic production practices had a greater capacity to improve soil quality and soil carbon pools, but it was inconsistent with the nitrate and the phosphate or available phosphorus, and that's probably because of appropriate balance of nutrients wasn't being put on or maintained. And I think that's a key that emerged in a lot of the research I looked at, that you have to be managing the nutrients well to ensure that soil fertility indicators are going to be improved with organic. Here's just a few other studies that people have done. This is showing Emily Marriott and Michelle Wander's work that shows that whether it's manure-based or legume-based, organic systems had, and this was in nine long-term farming system trials across the country, they had higher total carbon, total nitrogen, palm carbon, and the Illinois soil nitrogen test. Here's in southern Turkey, and John, you'd be amazed how many people, how many of those hundred-some papers that I found were from all over the world, Brazil, Turkey, Spain, everywhere. Here's showing aggregates in soils that had compost or manure applied were significantly larger than they were with control or mineral fertilizer only winter wheat and maize rotations in Turkey. Here's enzyme activities on organic and conventional olive oil farms in southern Spain, and these authors actually put together a geometric mean of enzymes. So there's another index. And in this case, using these box plots showed that with the dots marking outliers, this is 36 farms, 18 pairs of farms, and enzyme activity significantly higher in the organic farms in all cases other than the potential nitrification, which was higher in conventional, probably because of the applications of urea and ammonium there. But then when they relate their geometric mean of these enzyme activities to years since organic management started, or tillage intensity, you can see that they end up leaving out those three plots that are circled because tillage was so intensive there that, in fact, they got lower values. So this argues, again, for trying to reduce tillage, even in our organic systems, to try and maintain some of the benefits we get from organic matter additions. Here we see differences in community structure in the Swiss long-term field experiment that compared, and again, details aren't important, but it's comparing another fancier new generation soil quality indicator, comparing at the top, these are community structure that's being measured by community level substrates, and the bottom is TRFLP analysis of PCR-amplified bacterial 16S rRNA genes. And basically, the conclusions they came to are that the big differences up at the top were where you fertilize either manure or mineral fertilizers compared to where there was no fertilizer, and then some differences at the second level down between the grass and clover versus winter wheat. And in the RFLP analysis, the big difference being where you have farmyard manure or where you have conventional or no fertilizer. And in that case, seeing that the manure application was what made the big difference, not whether it was organic or biodynamic versus a conventional farm. Lots of articles about earthworm abundance being greater or not different or less, and explanations provided based on management practices that can interfere with the quality of those organic farms. Phosphorus, where some dairy farms end up with low soil test P, and others end up with much higher than conventional dairies. Again, probably related to how manure is being managed on those sites. And in Denmark, a big review of all the organic studies that had been done there showing higher levels of biological activity and normally less, a lower surplus of nutrients and less leaching in organic systems, but poor management could contribute to higher amounts of leaching and higher amounts of nutrients. Lori Drinkwater did some work with growers in New York and Pennsylvania. She worked on three grain and eight vegetable organic systems where they found that they had small surpluses or even deficits in organic grain farms, showing they were able to utilize nutrients really efficiently. But organic vegetable producers, over half of them were ending up putting on 180 to 200 kilograms of phosphorus or nitrogen per hectare per year in excess. So, again, how these systems are managed is the key to soil quality. And I think that these are the practices that we see again and again when we're talking about what we need to do to build soil quality in our soils. And I think this is the translation from science to practice that John was always interested in. I think these soil quality indicators allow us to see that we can really make a difference depending on the specific management we use. We need to add diverse sources of organic matter. We need to diversify our systems. We need to reduce our tillage, maintain optimum pH, test our soils, and pay attention to our nutrient loading, maintain good structure, and maintain cover whenever we can. And with that, I'll take any questions. Thank you.